Welcome to the Accelerating Operational Performance Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Schenkel, President of Unique Training and Development and Frontline Leadership Systems. And of course, our companies exist to really build the skills of your leaders to drive exceptional results and high levels of engagement. And today, our guest is actually a member of Unique's faculty. So Jason McKenzie is on our team as an instructor, but he also, like all of our instructors, does other business with customers. And so we're going to highlight both aspects of Jason's background. So let me properly introduce him. Today, I have a guest who truly understands the power of leadership in driving success and creating positive change. Our guest has trained over 1,000 leaders to achieve better results faster. And he co-developed the Appreciative Inquiry Management System, also short form AIMS, a powerful tool for driving strategy, elevating culture, and engaging people. With a background in building and leading technology teams to achieve remarkable human and business outcomes, our guest is dedicated to developing individuals through their work and helping them set and achieve big personal goals. Welcome Jason McKenzie to the podcast.
I'm happy to be here, Greg.
All right. Hey, I'm so glad that you could join me today. Jason and I have been collaborating lately on a new program we have for site leaders, so for plant managers or distribution center leaders. And so I'm getting to work more closely with them. And all I can tell you is that of all the people that I've met over the years, Jason is perhaps the best focused both listener and, as we're going to delve into in our interview today, really a practitioner in a great way with appreciative inquiry. So Jason, just to help people kind of understand a little bit of your journey up till this point, can you just kind of walk us through some of the career highlights?
Yeah, happy to do that, Greg. So I started my career as a software developer in IT in automotive manufacturing. And, you know, was reasonably successful, I would say. I thought I was a pretty good software developer. And what that led to was after maybe 4 years getting promoted into my first management position, for which I was woefully unprepared, had no training whatsoever and very little guidance, but thought that I was young. I thought I had it all figured out. And through the process of being in that role for roughly about 4 years, that ended up with me being demoted out of that role, which at the time was a very, very tough pill to swallow.
I can only imagine, and this is what we want people to understand, everyone's going to have setbacks, right? So you're demoted, yes. But it turns out it's just going to be fuel for your future success. Go ahead and continue.
100%. It took me a couple of years to actually realize that. But so I left that job from which I was demoted, and I went to do some independent consulting, working with some government agencies, technology consulting. And then what happened was somebody had built a good relationship. One of the plant managers at the company I had left called me and invited me back to be a IT manager at one of the manufacturing facilities. So it was an opportunity for me to go back to a very tough environment because the previous plants in this company I'd worked for were all making money hand over fist. This one was losing money badly. And the future of the plant was actually in question at that time. And so for me, it was a real chance to see if some of the growth I had, you know, the things I'd been working on, the skills I'd acquired, and also some of the personal growth that I'd seen in myself would be enough to make an impact in a real operational environment that was, you know, under intense pressure. And so I went back there. I ended up also becoming the purchasing manager and supplier quality manager over time. And that was a really exceptional experience for me. I learned a lot about, you know, what it means to be a great leader. But at the same time, I still labored under some of the limitations of what I think is traditional leadership thinking. And that really led me down a path of learning about what you mentioned, appreciative inquiry, which I'm sure we'll talk about at length a little bit later. But so I left that role. I was in that role for about 3 years. I left of my own accord, went and decided to start a business, kind of on the side, more of a side hustle type thing, just to see where it went with a business partner of mine. I ended up going back to Canada Life, which is obviously for all the Canadians listening, is a huge financial services company, led a big technology team there. And really was able to work with the team to get some really exceptional results and learn a lot of things and really perfect. I had a captive audience also to perfect some of the things that we were creating with Ames, as you mentioned. And so I left that job some time ago and went into business full time for myself. And like also throughout that journey, a little earlier, set back for a second, I started doing working with Unique and you and delivering leadership training, which I absolutely love doing. And so, yeah, it's been the developing leaders and human potential and unlocking the capacity and the potential in teams has just been a real passion of mine and a growing passion of mine for many years now.
Yeah, so what's awesome about Jason's background is he's very honest and transparent, and you're going to hear that throughout our interview. The one thing, though, to remember is no one's career goes in an exact straight line of success. And even some of the, what I would guess would be, we'd call the crappier parts of your career when you're either not in the ideal situation or you're not performing the way that you'd like or other people think you're not performing. It's still amazing how that's all just part of the tapestry of success that you eventually achieve. So I do want to dig in a little bit more into appreciative inquiry. What is it that I guess sparked your initial interest in it? And maybe to start with, just a quick synopsis of what appreciative inquiry's foundational element is, and then what is it that sparked your interest in investigating it and getting to know it?
Yeah, great question. Something I love talking about. So fundamentally, appreciative inquiry, it's people describe it as the search through questions for the best of the past, the best of the present, and the best of the future. And so what that really means is, as if you think about how a most of us as leaders and really as people, how we traditionally operate is we tend to focus on and even obsess about everything that is like wrong, broken, or missing. Right. So, you know, we look at where the standard of where things we want things to be, and we look at all of the negative, say, deviations from that standard. And fixing those problems is absolutely a way to get better. But appreciative inquiry takes a completely different lens on how to move a team forward. So instead of always focusing on what's wrong, appreciative inquiry posits that when you focus on what is working, like what is right, and what is working well, both like when things have worked well in the past, the things that are working well right now, there is an incredible amount of gold you can mine from those experiences to build on the future that you most want. So if you think about the two words, it's appreciative, which is not is is much more than just walking around telling people what you appreciate about them. It's the idea that what we appreciate appreciates, or another way of saying that is what we focus on, we find and we get more of. So if you make a habit of habitually studying, looking for and studying excellence in individuals and in processes and in teams, you're going to find it and you're going to learn very powerful lessons about how you can do more of those things to create the future that you most want to move towards. So that's the appreciative part. The inquiry part is really about the idea that the questions we ask are fateful. So, in other words, when we ask questions, positive, generative, open-ended questions, again, that study the best of the past, the present, and the future, but when people have been at their best, et cetera, the very act of asking a question like that changes the future before you even have the answer. Because what it does is it stops people, it redirects their energy and their attention and their inspiration towards actually thinking about excellence, again, in the past, present, and future. And so it's a very different way of looking at it's really a philosophy for looking at the world. And then what we have done with Ames is really develop like tools and skills and like practical ways of applying this as a leader. So you can almost use it as a foundation for how you do everything from how you have a one-on-one conversation to somebody, to how you think about a problem, to how you run a team meeting, to how you set goals, hold each other accountable, all that stuff. So I'll stop the monologue there, but
Yeah,
that's fundamentally what
no,
appreciative inquiry is.
I think you did a great job of summarizing it. And I've always just been curious about it because I've seen you do it. And at first, I'm like, gee, this sounds a bit like weird. And then I see you consistently apply it. I see you use it even in our frontline leadership program that you teach for some of our clients. And I know at the public workshop, people really enjoy and frequently tell other people in the company to come to the workshop. So I know it's working. Explain, like, when did you discover it in your career path, and what was the catalyst for it, or was it just a course that you took and then you just fell in love with it?
No, it was actually quite serendipitous, I would say. So when I was working at the manufacturing facility, when I came back and I was the IT manager, I was still what I would consider a fairly traditional leader. So the idea being, I would set the goals for the team. I would be the person who, holds people accountable to making sure that they're doing the things they need to do. And, I tried to be an inspiring person, et cetera, but it still seemed, while I was probably doing a better job than I had done in the past of being a leader, it still seemed difficult. Like almost like walking through mud in a way to sustain change and keep people motivated and get them, having to convince them why what we were working on was a good idea and to help trying to help them see why it was important to them, et cetera. And I just happened to be driving back from Toronto. I still remember where I was when I was driving, and I listened to this podcast and two people just randomly talking about appreciative inquiry. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, that seems like just a better way of approaching life. They weren't even really talking about leadership, actually. They were just talking about the idea of appreciative inquiry and using it to, they were talking about actually planning a conference and how appreciative they were going to use appreciative inquiry to sort of unlock the collective genius in the team. And I remember thinking, wow, that is fascinating and really interesting idea. And so I just got obsessed with it, and at the time, what was interesting was appreciative inquiry was fairly academic. So you could read all these books about like the power of positive psychology and all this stuff, but there was no, I mean, I went down the rabbit hole on this for probably a year and I still did not know how to apply it to a team setting. It was very esoteric and academic. And so I really got obsessed with like, how do you actually make this work? And so that became my, the path I went down on is how to make this applicable to drive results, improve culture, and engage and develop people over time, and to do it at the same time. So that's that. It was really just a
Yeah.
very, maybe I'm not sure I believe in coincidences, but just listening to a podcast at the right time.
You got the right information. And of course, you were dealing with that frustration. And I think probably even just being sort of an observer in you while you're going through some of this transformation is, I was like going, but of course, management's all about exceptions and looking for what the flaws are and figuring out how to turn them around. I mean, that's kind of business 101, manage by exception, look where the problems are and fix them. So I think everyone listening to this or watching this can probably agree that that is kind of the rat race of being a people manager, is you're just sort of stressed out about how you're going to get your team to deliver on these results. And I wondered if you have a, by the way, we're talking to Jason McKenzie, who's a co-founder of Ames Institute. You can, of course, reach him at ames-institute.com. And Jason, I'm wondering, obviously, you've applied this to a number of companies, including companies that we've worked collaboratively together with. And I'm wondering, can you share an example where taking an appreciative inquiry approach unlocks either better or different results or greater commitment?
Absolutely. So, because one thing I want to make very clear is appreciative inquiry is not about ignoring problems. It's not some pie in the sky, toxic positivity where we try to pretend everything is great all the time. It's not that at all.
Wait, whoa, whoa, whoa,
Appreciative
hold it.
inquiry.
Hold on a second. Toxic positivity? What are you talking
Yes.
about?
So toxic positivity being the idea that, we give people participation medals, we celebrate things, we don't address the underlying issues that need to be addressed. We don't hold people accountable. We rah-rah cheerlead for people, regardless of whether the results we're getting, et cetera. That, to me, that's toxic positivity. But appreciative inquiry is not about ignoring problems at all. It's about the lens that we look at problems through, right? So I'll give you an example. Let's say you're working on a shop floor and there's two types of problem. There's two types of situations we often talk about. One is a technical problem and one is an adaptive opportunity. So if you think of a machine on the shop floor is broken down, that's a technical problem. You need to fix it, right? So that involves following a process. It might require specific tools, specific expertise, et cetera. So if you have a technical problem, you need to get the machine back up and running. That's not what appreciative inquiry is about. Appreciative inquiry is about looking at that situation and identifying the adaptive opportunity. And when I say adaptive, I mean, an opportunity for growth that requires sort of challenging the status quo on how we're thinking, talking, and acting. So if the machine is broken down, the technical problem, like the solution is to fix the machine using whatever tools and process expertise you need. The adaptive opportunity might be, how might production and maintenance work seamlessly together? So, we achieve exceptional uptime and exceed our customers' expectations every time. That is when appreciative inquiry is at its most powerful, because what you're doing is, instead of focusing narrowly on the technical problem, you're identifying and asking questions. If you notice what I just said there was I asked a question, how might production and maintenance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's asking a powerful generative question about the best of what the future could be,
So
right? And so,
let me ask you a little bit more in depth, because I was with you as we were delivering our new site leader development program, and something that really caught the attention of the group, and they said, "Oh, this definitely has to stay into the final, final course structure," is you had this activity where you called it "Name It, Flip It, and Elevate It." And I wonder, I think that's what you just described doing to that maintenance issue. But I know you also did this for another mutual client of ours where they were really focused on safety. I just wondered, can you help me understand or help the audience understand what it means to name it, flip it, and elevate it?
Yeah, so actually, let me give you an example from an example of the limitations of focusing on the problem and then how you can turn a problem into an opportunity, right? So let's say, for example, you have, I faced this actually at one point in my career when I was just learning appreciative inquiry. So let's say people are showing up late for my team meetings. Okay, so I was leading a team and people would show up, most people would show up on time, but some people would show up late for team meetings. So if I was focused, which I actually did do at the beginning, I focused strictly on the problem, which was getting people together and talking to them about being late, right? And they, trying to understand, holding them accountable to being late. Here's the thing though. What people ended up telling me when I would ask them why, why are you late? People said, these meetings are kind of terrible. Nobody enjoys coming to them.
So
And
there's a moment
it's
of truth, first of all, right? And this is something that people need to do, is they need to understand that sometimes when you ask this question, and if you're an approachable leader, they might tell you the truth, which is helpful to know. But continue on.
Absolutely. So focusing on the problem of getting people to show up on time, I could discipline them, I could do all these things. And if they were showing up on time, would it have been better than them showing up late? Yeah, sure, possibly. But it wouldn't mean that the meetings were an incredibly effective use of time. So name it, flip it, frame it is basically how do you take a problem and then turn it into an opportunity that you want to, like a possibility or something you really want to work toward. And this is from actually from a book called Conversations Worth Having, which is one of the best leadership books on appreciative inquiry I've read. But the idea would be you say this, okay? You say, the problem is people are showing up late for meetings. The flip it is you then say, what is the positive opposite of that? Okay, so it's really just taking it and flipping it. So people are late for meetings. Flipping it is people are on time for meetings. Elevating it is what would be even better than that, right? So in this case, it might be our team meetings are so productive and connecting and such an integral part of our team culture that people are lined up at the door waiting to, or it's people's favorite part of the week, let's say. That's what you want to create. And the idea here is that if, so we bring the team together and we have a conversation based on questions about what would that exceptional team meeting look like, and we get people to design it. And the idea being is that not only did we, and will you create a much more powerful, connecting, productive team meeting, it will resolve the problem of people being late because they'll be excited to be there. So when you focus on what you actually want, you tend to solve the problems you're having anyway, but you also go much further than just going from broken to fixed. You go from maybe broken to innovator, innovation. It's a super powerful way of getting people hearts and minds and passions and creativity involved in creating what you all really want, what you all really want.
So there's an order of magnitude of amping up the value essentially by doing that. It actually, without knowing that, I once did a project where we were helping project managers who had to run new business launch meetings inside an automotive parts company. And they'd be running, a number of projects maybe simultaneously, four, five, or six, all run by different project managers, and they had the same problem. The people weren't showing up, or the right people weren't showing up. When they were there, they were on their laptops instead of engaging in the discussion. And I remember the comment I said to the group, I said, "What if you, as the plant manager, created a meeting that people didn't want to skip? They basically wanted to be there because of the way you ran it. And wouldn't that be a goal?" So I didn't know sort of how to go to the next step, which I want to now go one layer deeper with that. So the idea, first of all, is to frame problems as opportunities and then think about what the true extra value could be if you actually elevated that or reframed it. The other thing that I got from you, and you practiced this in your tenure at the financial services industry, it's how do you go to, instead of management having to come up with all the genius ideas and try to convince everybody, how do you go to the next level where the people are, as you said, co-designing it, but also then really increasing their commitment levels? Can you kind of walk us through some of that?
Absolutely. I think this is one of the most fundamental and liberating shifts a leader can make, because it's a lot of pressure to feel like the person at the top and be, an army of one. It's lonely, and I've got to come up with all the good ideas, etc. And appreciative inquiry, one of the fundamental ideas behind appreciative inquiry is that the collective wisdom that is present in any group of people is exponentially greater than what you could have, you or I or anyone as a single human being, regardless of whether your position or your title, could ever hope to possess. And so recognizing that, okay, my job isn't to have all the answers and just to convince people. My job is to find ways to unlock, to ask the kinds of questions and lead the kinds of conversations that unlock the collective genius in this group of
Hey,
people.
before you go into
And
how, just
yeah.
before you go into how, it's interesting how we are essentially the normal indoctrination is that you're raised to be a lone wolf in some cases, where your job is to try to figure stuff out and come up with solutions. And I know in my company's history, when I did that too much, the company actually nearly failed or did fail, and then we resurrected it. But I really learned after that just tapping into one or two or three other people's ideas or perspectives on things really helped create certainly different ideas, sometimes better ideas. But you're even going further to that because you're going to not only get more and better ideas, but you're actually going to drive greater commitment to implementing those ideas. So continue on with kind of how you get that team to take ownership of some of those ideas after they've helped create them.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll use the meeting example because it's a simple, understandable example. So let's say, we've identified that we want to, as a team, so people are showing up late, we flip it, people are showing up on time, and we elevate it to say our meetings are so productive and connecting and such an integral part of our culture that are everybody's favorite part of the week. So then the next question is, okay, that's what we want to create. So as the leader, or I say a practitioner of appreciative inquiry, my job then is to say, what are the questions I can ask that study excellence from the past, excellence or what's working in the present, and how do we build on that to create like this ultimate team meeting that we want to create? So what I might ask is, I might get people together and I might give them a minute to say, hey, think of a team meeting that you've been a part of anywhere, or a group meeting anywhere in your life where you felt like it was connecting and productive and that your voice was heard. And that you walked out of feeling like that was time really well spent. I'm going to think back to a time when that happened and really think about like, what are the one or two or three characteristics or lessons that we can learn, like characteristics of that meeting or that experience, or what are the lessons that we can learn from that experience that we can build on? So, and that a question about the present might be, think about the way that we're interacting with each other right now. That's working really well, that feels good to you, that creates a sense of belonging. Well, again, same thing. What is it that we can learn from the way that what's working really well about the way we're interacting right now? And then maybe another question would be, how might we, ensure or weave our team or company values into the very fabric of our team meeting so that every team meeting is also an opportunity to catch, acknowledge, and celebrate people leading these values. So what you do is you ask these questions, you give people a chance to reflect on the questions, write down whatever comes to mind. You get them into small groups to be talking with one another, to be sharing their answers, because this gives every single person a voice. One of the leaders, and
Oh,
anybody who's led a
I
team.
want to pause you right now
Okay,
because we, as you know, in our company, sometimes we'll run a survival simulation or a problem-solving simulation, and one of the things we cover is just the loudest people on the team, the most outgoing, will typically voice their issues, and often the leader is actually one of those people and voices their input, and the quieter members of the team who may have some really interesting insights just don't get heard. So you just said we're giving a voice to people to contribute. And again, like you said, it's kind of like your comment about toxic positivity. It's not about listening to people to listen to them, although that's a side benefit. It's listening to them because they probably have something valuable to share, but they're not the type of person to presuppose that what they're going to share is valuable, so they just don't say it unless somebody asks them to contribute it. So I think that's an important lesson to know as you're facilitating conversations, because many leaders are like, so I go, any ideas, everybody? And my most confident people express an idea. My quieter people sit back because they're just not as confident in what they might share. So you're really giving a voice to make sure that you get all the great ideas that might be in the group, not just from the people who are the loudest.
That is absolutely right. Because to your point, putting an idea out there in front of a group of people, whether it's your team or some other group of people, it's an emotional risk. And people, because what if the idea is rejected or dumb or I misunderstood the question or whatever? And so most people are not willing to take that emotional risk. They just won't say anything. So the idea with appreciative inquiry is it's about the questions that you ask. So we always ask generative questions, so open-ended positive questions that study the best of the past, present, and what the future could be. And then it's how you design and facilitate the conversation. So for example, a tool that we use is something called think, pair, share, right? So in this case, it would be, hey, I'm going to give you some questions to think about. Take a couple of minutes, just write down the answers, get into smaller groups, and then give people the task of every single person now share your answers with one another. Just go around in your little group. A group is safer. A smaller group is safer. So what you do is you give people a task and an outcome to come back with, right? So you say, share your answers with one another. And as a group, come back with the two or three things that you think we must incorporate into this next amazing version of our team meeting, right? And so then what happens is say you have three or four groups or whatever, you get people to come back with their ideas, and then you just say, okay, now based on what just emerged here, let's just design a prototype. Break them into two groups and say, everybody has 10 minutes. Based on what just emerged and all the things we think we should include, just design an agenda. Just design a prototype agenda for this team meeting. And then let's just pick one and go with it and see how it works. And what happens is probably within this whole thing would take 30, 40 minutes. In the 40 minutes, you have developed a new version of something that you can try, a prototype that has really invited in and included the best of everybody's collective wisdom. And you can do this with anything. It could be a process, it could be a checklist, it could be a goal setting, it could be executing on goals, it could be core team values, it could be the ways you want to work together, how you want to hold each other accountable. This approach, what's beautiful about this approach is it works and you can apply it to any scenario.
Yeah.
Super powerful.
So I want to highlight this because many operational leaders are probably like, oh man, I don't have time to have a 3-day retreat to figure out how to make our production meetings better. But if you've got a problem that's been fairly persistent and you're playing whack-a-mole with it, for example, or you keep scratching your head and trying to come up with solutions, they just don't seem to have traction, or they're not getting consistent results. Maybe it is worth taking 45 minutes, which isn't, the same as going away for a week to do it, but 45 minutes to do that. So what I'm curious of is, I know that you and your partner will facilitate sessions like this for clients. What's involved in, do you go a step further, which is trying to teach the clients to be able to do that or develop those best practices?
Yeah, so really what we're passionate about is developing the capabilities like within our clients, right? So we will go in and we will, AIMS as an entire management system. So we can help facilitate the conversations around strategic planning, goal setting, visioning, values, et cetera. And we use it all like through an appreciative inquiry lens. So we invite, depending on the size of the company, either the entire company together to help, you know, develop the strategy. One of the things we often say is, when I'm working with a potential client is, if I'm talking to a CEO or business owner, I said, my job is to convince you that the janitor or frontline worker, or, you know, whoever you consider the low, quote, lowest person on the totem pole, my job is to convince you that they have wisdom and insight that can contribute to the strategic direction of this company, right? Because when you bring people into a room like that, it's incredibly powerful and everybody has insight that can add value. So we do that. But the other thing that we do is that I think is really revolutionary is we deliver leadership training programs that take people through the entire end-to-end process of identifying, bringing their team together for like an appreciative inquiry workshop, and then executing and implementing on the change. And so what happens there is they get the entire set of AIMS tools. So this would be like, say, for a team leader, manager, director, et cetera. But they get to understand how to not only bring their people together and unlock that collective wisdom, but how to actually execute and implement on change. And I'll tell you, when people come back and they've conducted this, we usually get them to do like a 4-hour workshop, which if you think about it, is not insignificant, right? I mean, people usually find leading a half hour or an hour team meeting to be a daunting task. So what we do is we get them to come up with a change effort that they want to do. We get them to name it, like identify a problem, name it, flip it, elevate it. And then we teach them how to conduct the workshop and then execute on what comes out of the workshop. And when they come back after their workshop, you should see their minds are blown because they're following this proven process. We didn't even create this process for coming up with this workshop. This is a well-known thing in the appreciative inquiry field. Our job, where our value is really helping people execute on what comes out of it. But people come out just like I was after I did my first one, realizing that, oh my goodness, what happened in that room was mind-boggling, and I was the person that facilitated it. It's such an amazing thing to come back and see that, like, I never would have thought this was possible with this group of people.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. So what I wanted to share is that Jason brings a flavor of this even when he's teaching our frontline leadership program, because it's baked into the fabric. It's in his DNA and his operating system as a human being. So I just think you're going to fascinate some of the people who are listening to the podcast. And remember that if you want to reach out to Jason to hear more about appreciative inquiry, the best thing to do is to reach him on his website at aims-institute.com. And just have a conversation about how this might help you solve some of your operational problems. So, Jason, you've really given us a lot to chew on as far as accelerating operational performance with some of these tips. And I just value having you on our team. So thank you so much for your time today.
Really happy to be here, Greg.
And of course, if you want to reach out to Jason for some of his services, if you're just intrigued about how we as a company can help you with your frontline leaders, your middle managers, or your plant managers in the new plant manager development program, please reach out and start a conversation on our website at uniquedevelopment.com. All good things start with a conversation, and you never know how you can escalate the value and engagement in your organization. For now, I'll just say use this, put it into action, make your life better and the lives of your team better, and drive operating performance. Until next time, I'm Greg Schenkel for the Accelerating Operational Performance Podcast.